Prophecy of the Air, Primordium. What's that all about? Coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the best, the only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right. You're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Right Stuff, the Queen of Tuesday Night, Parker J. I'm so excited you are here with me today. We are going to be talking to J.C. Lamont and her new debut novel, Prophecy of the Air, Primordium. I cannot wait to delve into this wonderful story. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. It is getting rave reviews, so I'm so excited to share it with you, and we'll be talking about it in just a few moments. I want to thank all of you for your support of my book, Eva, which is book one of the Heart to South Dakota series. Very excited about what's going on with you guys as far as loving the book. I've been getting really good reviews. People have actually reached out to me saying how much they enjoyed Eva. So thank you so much. You know, that was a project of the heart, and without you guys, I don't know what I do. So thank you so much for your support. You can also get a copy of that on Amazon. My next book coming out will be next month. I can't wait to tell you more about that. Still working on it, though. So yay, right? Now, as always, we want to invite you to join our Patreon group. I want to thank R.D. Palmer and Chris Gotcher for being our quill. I'm sorry, not our quill, our pen marker patrons. They give to this ministry. You can also decide to give to this ministry by simply going to patreon.com/rightstuff. We have been doing this now for 7 years in July, showcasing Christian authors around the world. And I have news coming up in the few weeks. I'm going to tell you about that. Just some great stuff happening behind the scenes. If you want to weigh in on our topic, you know you can. Simply call in at 646-668-8485 and press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers only to be told your themes are a bit too religious. We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. I am so glad you are here with me today. We are going to be talking to J.B. Lamont. Her debut novel, Prophecy of the Air, Primordium, is book one of the Chronicles of Time series. And what's really unique about this series is that JC is using secular history to help open our minds up to scriptural truth. So I'm so excited to share this work with you. Looking forward to talking to her. So again, if you want to weigh in, you certainly can by calling in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air. And without further ado, let me introduce our guest co-host and contributor today, J.C. Lamont. J.C., how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
And thank you so much for being with me on the show today. Very excited to share with our listeners about your new book, Prophecy of the Air. I know about the book from your wonderful husband, Robert Mullins, and his books that I thoroughly enjoyed, which is The Gods Arise. That's the second book. The Gods Arise is the first book. I'm saying the title, but I love his work. So I was so thrilled to have the opportunity to showcase your book on this show. I'm really looking forward to our discussion. So thank you, thank you. Thank you so much for being with me today on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, JC, one of the things I found that you and I have a connection with, that you were also part of the Christian Apologetics Alliance. And that was so cool because I was part of the Christian Apologetics Alliance back in the day. So before I have you tell us a little bit about yourself, would you say that your apologetic background helped you when you were writing Prophecy of the Air, Primordium?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is trying to defend against attacks that God is not loving, especially the new atheist attacks on the God of the Old Testament. Like, that's primarily what I wrote about, and so I've incorporated a lot of that into the novel.
What I like is that instead of going away from the faith like some people do, what you did was try to find the answers to some of the difficult questions and arguments that people bring up. Why do you think it's important for us to try to find the answers when some people question us about things, about faith, about God, about Jesus, the Bible, and everything else in between?
Yes.
Well, no, what I was asking you is that why I think that's important to be able to have defense when people ask questions about God, Jesus, and the Bible.
Because people do walk away. You know, people don't understand, if God is all-loving and all-powerful, then why is there suffering in the world? Why did he let their child die? Why did he let, you know, cancer, them get cancer? And you know, I think a lot of people struggle with that. So
I think
we know where the origins of
it. JC, are you still there?
Sorry?
There you
yes.
go. I couldn't hear you. JC, you were saying that one of the origins, I think you were about to say evil, but I didn't quite hear what you were saying. Go ahead and continue.
Oh, yeah, I think understanding the origins of evil and that God promised to defeat evil and eradicate it in the end. And, you know, that's the hope and the confidence that the apostles speak of. It's not a good life here in this fallen world, but it's the happily ever after that he has promised us.
I'm glad you said that. It's the happily ever after that he promised us. And some people think that the way things are now is the way things that will always be. But I know in your series, Chronicles of Time, you're going to be taking us this journey of how things are going to change. You're going to do that through a lot of different mediums. So I can't wait to tell more of our listeners about it. But I definitely wanted our listeners to know about the apologetic background, because I think that's important to understand that not everyone going to give you a cliche answer to hard questions of life. They do want a well thought out, well reasoned response to some of these tough questions. So I definitely want to give our listeners an opportunity to know that about you. But I can want to give you the floor now and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a stay-at-home mom of an autistic 4-year-old and a very hyperactive 2-year-old. I'm currently going to school for a degree in biblical studies, and not only am I working on this novel series, but I'm soon to be launching a Bible curriculum for homeschooled high schoolers.
Sick. I know the homeschoolers are going to enjoy that. I like that. How does one start that? How do you start a curriculum? When do you say, you know what, I'm going to give you education that you need? How does that work?
I was supposed to launch this past May, actually, at a homeschool conference, but it got canceled because of COVID. I have my own media company, His Story Media, and right now what I'm working on is a high school curriculum that teaches biblical literacy, 9th to 12th grade. And then when my series is done, I'm actually going to do one based on the series, again, for high schoolers, that draws from the books to make it more fun. So the kids are like, oh, can I do my Bible homework? And, you know, hopefully get them to love scripture and see how it's relevant to their lives instead of being bored because mom made them go read the Bible again.
Let's talk about biblical literacy. Again, this is me falling back on your apologetic background, because biblical literacy is rampant for our Western society.
Yes.
Like one guy said, Hank, talk about biblical literacy and why it is so important, because again, this background that you have led to some of the tenets that you have in prophecy or primordial.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry, what was the question?
With biblical literacy, let's talk about what that is and why it is important.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think one of the most relevant things is that people know Jesus came and died for their sins, but I don't, you know, 1 John says Jesus appeared to destroy the works of the devil. The Son of God, the Son of Man appeared to destroy the works of the devil. I don't think a lot of people really understand everything that was accomplished on the cross. And, you know, that the gospel is not Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It starts in Genesis and it ends in Revelation. Everything Christ did in his life, his death, his resurrection, and his ascension, becoming king, is extremely relevant to what he did. There's a tendency to turn the gospel into what I think it's Scott McKnight calls the plan of salvation. And they're confusing what the gospel is with the plan of salvation. Jesus taught the gospel. John the Baptist taught the gospel. So if Jesus is going around teaching the gospel and he's not telling anyone that he is going to die and be resurrected, because he told the disciples not to tell anyone that, so then the death and resurrection isn't the gospel. The gospel is that he had arrived. The prophecy from Genesis 3:15 of the coming Messiah who would break the curse of death that humans brought onto the world, that is the gospel. He's like, I'm here. I have come. I have fulfilled that promise. And then everything of that encompasses all the way to his enthronement in heaven.
It's wonderful that you brought that out. See that you definitely said, you know, the gospel is not just the 4 books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. It's the whole Bible. It's all the good news. Hank Hanegraaff likes to say redemptive revelation and everything else in between the Bible is. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And I think it's important that people understand that the good news is the entire word of God. And what's even more interesting is that woven within the good news that Christ is going to rest our stories that are the patriarchs and the matriarchs of the Bible, some of the people that we sometimes deify, that they are the ones who are interwoven through prophecy. You have King David, you have Joseph, you have all these major patriarchs and matriarchs of the Bible that we deify. And it's amazing to me that included in the good news is us. What would you say to that, JC?
Oh, I definitely think that we are part of it, because as the Jews were called to be a light to the nations and a priest, a kingdom of priests, Peter says the same thing as the believers in Jesus. We are called to be a kingdom of priests. We are to reflect God's glory to a broken world.
One thing I want people to know a little bit more about you is, how did the genesis of prophecy air begin? What was that tiny moment where you said, I've got to write this down?
Well, I left home at 17 because my father, mm-hmm. who was a pastor, was rather emotionally and spiritually abusive. He would twist scripture to prove that God couldn't look at me or hear my prayers. So when I left home, I never bothered reading the Bible because I thought it was a book about how much God hated me.
Mm-hmm.
So making a very long story short, I accidentally discovered the God of love in the pages of the Old Testament. And so I went out and I bought a Bible because I was dumbfounded that God loved me and I wanted to know more. And I read it in about 6 months. And then reading it that fast is what showed me that it was one story. And what I like to call an action-packed battle rhythm love story. And I wanted to share that with other hurting people immediately, but I knew I couldn't run around grabbing people and saying, read the Bible in 6 months, because people would just think I was crazy. So I got this idea kind of, if I remember correctly, it was just like, oh, you need to write the whole story, and you need to write from the viewpoint of the angels because they're the only ones alive through the whole thing. So that's kind of where it came from.
Amazing. God will use a place of pain to show you his love, and he has you act upon it by writing the story. And I got to tell you, you know, when I was talking to Robert offline, Robert was, you have got to read it, Parker. He was like, she's taking everything. It's not just this. It's not just that. I'm like, okay. I'm excited. He was so raving about your book, Stacey, and he is your fan. Best believe he is your fan. I love that about it. And it was just really encouraging about you, about the story. And I was so excited to showcase it to our listeners out there. And for those listening, we are talking to J.C. Lamont and her debut novel, Prophecy of the Air, Primordium, Book 1, The Chronicles of Time series. It's available at Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you love my sister and get a copy of it today. If you want to weigh in on our topic, you know you can. We call in at 646-8485, then press 1 to live on air, or hit me on Twitter at ParkerJCo, hashtag right stuff, with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring his gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. So very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to debut author J.C. Lamont and her first book, Prophecy of the Air, Primordium. It's book one of the Chronicles of Time series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. I'm so excited to showcase this book to you because J.C. does have an apologetic background coming from that wonderful place, Christian Apologetics Alliance, I'm also from too. Plus, she used a place of pain to help spearhead her writing career. And she's also using her knowledge of things that she learned to share with other people by creating a curriculum for homeschoolers. So there's a lot that she's doing. I'm so excited to showcase her to you. J.C., once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you again for having me.
I'm excited because I want to get through some more of our questions here because I know our listeners definitely want to know more about Prophecy of the Air, Primordium. So with that, you know, we talked about, you know, where the idea came from. But before I do that, because there's a lot of information going on with this book, particularly since you do have an apologetic background, I know you're going to come at it from various different disciplines. So what I want to find out was, what was the writing process like with this particular book?
Lots and lots of research. I want it to be very historically accurate. So it's what's very uncommon in fiction books is an appendix listing all of my sources. Lots of research. I'm also what's called an architect. I have to know everything before I begin writing. So I have to know the theme, the plot points, the overall series arc, the overall novel's arc, every character's arc. So my planning stage is very, very long. And then I actually write the book and then I go into editing phase, which I'm a perfectionist. So that is also a very long phase. So the actual writing part of it is probably the shortest that I do.
I cannot even. I'm a pantser through and through, J.C. So the fact that you said you're an architect, that you have to know everyone's story, that just floors me. I am not like that. But I commend people who are. I truly do because you know where you are going. I have to flub my way sometimes because I'm a pantser. I would say that's the joy of the journey when you write, you know, finding out those things. Do you ever find yourself deviating from, let's say, this guy is going to do this, and then something happens as you write that deviates from your plan?
Very, very rarely. In the second one that comes after Primordium, I didn't have a plan for the angels going into Sodom and Gomorrah to rescue Lot. And so that was one scene that I wrote as a pantser. And here they just decide to go visit the other 4 cities and get anyone righteous out of there to, like, a fire's coming, go, you must leave, because they can't find enough righteous. So they know it's going to blow up. And I'm like, I don't know that that happened. So, no, I don't like when my characters just decide to go off on their own, because I'm like, you know, they found, like, one little poor orphan in the street, and so they're like, go, get out of this city, and I don't know. I mean, the Bible doesn't say they didn't warn anyone in those 4 cities, but it doesn't say they did either, so, yeah, no, I like the plan. I like my characters to obey what I tell them to do.
That's fascinating, because I think sometimes, though, you do have to let that spontaneity come through, because that spontaneity can be just a prick of the Holy Spirit putting that thought in there. Because as soon as you said that, I thought maybe that did happen. You know, that's fantastic. We don't know what happened. We weren't there. But just the idea just titillates, you know, the idea that was happening. So I'm glad you added that in story. And one thing that happened, we get a comment from Mingy Lee. And Mingy said, it's interesting that you're using secular history to, I want to say, amp up or support scriptural truths. Tell us a little bit about that. You did say you have appendices in your book, but tell us why that was one of the research paths that you went when writing Primordium.
There's not as much in Primordium just because so much of it takes place in heaven before the fall of Lucifer. And
right.
Primordium is mostly pre-flood, but so it's the first in a trilogy called Prophecy of the Heir, which goes all the way through the birth of Christ. So for Prophecy of the Heir, there was a lot of Sumerian and Babylonian and Akkadian research that went into it because so much of that does support the Bible. For instance, there's a Polynesian island that has a myth, so-called by the secularists, that after a building project, all of their language got changed. And after a flood, during a building project, all of their languages got changed, and that's where all the languages came from. And like, the secularists are just like, oh, it's just a coincidence. There's flood and language confusion myths built into our DNA. And I'm like, I think the fact that a Polynesian island, I mean, because even if you had a confusion of tongues built into your DNA, why a building project? Why was a building project abandoned when the confusion of tongues came? And why did it happen right after a flood? You don't see that type of connection unless it's memory. It's, you know, it's historic memory. Everyone came from the flood. Everyone knows there was, back then, knew that there was a global flood. They were there for the change of the languages. That's just
and
example.
I think, that's a good example too, because there are a lot of flood legends in various cultures. Like you said, there's a historic memory that would be transferred down through the years. Plus, if the language is confused, they're going to remember it a certain way. So the name may not be Noah, like we say now, it could be Noah. I remember in one book, the guy's name was, I cannot remember the name, Sumerian. There it goes, Sumerian. It's like a Sumerian name that he used. And he talked about how it was a great ship and there was a turtle and all these other things. The languages are going to be confused, and languages are very unique, and they're going to tell the story slightly different, but at the nucleus of the story is the same story. You know, that part.
Right.
Like you said, you know, why would this island, have a story? And I love when authors take secular history and amp up scriptural truth. I love that. So I'm really looking forward to Chronicles of the Heir. Now, I've already given our listeners just a hint of what Prophecy of the Heir Primordium is all about. Again, Prophecy of the Heir Primordium by J.C. Lamont is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you love them, my sister, and get your copy today. Tell us about Prophecy of the Heir. We've already given our listeners hints of it. Go ahead. Tell us what this particular book is about.
Primordium itself. Primordium is, it basically is the foundation for the entire series. And so it starts with, it actually starts with the Book of Life being written, because Revelation says that was written before the foundations of the time or foundations of the world were laid. But it's basically Michael's struggle to understand why God did not intervene and stop Satan from tempting Adam and Eve, why he didn't stop the events that led to the flood, why he chose global annihilation as a way to rescue people, why he allowed Satan to torment Job and kill his children. Like this, the theme of Primordium is Michael's struggle to get to a point where he accepts and remains loyal despite not being able to understand.
That could be a show in and itself, JC. Like, you are tackling head on why evil exists. And I always say, if we had been God and we had Adam and Eve do the thing, what we would have done is killed Adam and Eve. Like, okay, that didn't work out. And that would be
right.
As a matter of fact,
right.
If you look at Greek mythology, that happened twice before the age of heroes. The first time they created man, man was pretty stupid, and so they killed them off. The second time they created man, man was too aggressive, so they killed them off. The third time was the age of heroes. And that's Greek mythology, but Greek mythology has human aspects to it. And so that's what we would have done. You know, if we have like a, I'm using bees because right now I want to talk about the murder hornets. But let's say we have a colony of bees or whatever, and the bees go crazy. We do. We kill off the bees. We can't fix this mistake. And so, again, it comes to this theme I've been experiencing for the last several weeks about how does God use a negative thing, turn it positive? Like I said earlier on the show, one of my shows, we see a broken egg. All we can do is throw it away. God sees a broken egg and sees opportunity, but we don't know how that looks. You know, broken egg be a good thing. So I'm so glad you're tackling that. And so what are some of the other things that you're discovering and discussing in Primordium?
I'm sorry, what are the other what in Primordium?
The other themes you're exploring.
Oh, themes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that one was definitely the big one.
Yeah.
I guess from like the biblical literacy standpoint, you know, why Genesis should be taken literal, how history supports that. Drawing from Second Temple Jewish sources to show that they did indeed believe that it was Satan in the garden, because some secularists attack that as, oh, that's a Christian thing. The Bible doesn't, you know, the Jewish Bible doesn't actually say that. And, you know, there's Jewish sources that say, no, Satan took the serpent like a cloak is one of them, that Satan had to ask mm-hmm. permission of the serpent to possess him with the intent to deceive. So I don't, you know, if that is true, then it explains why the serpent was also cursed, because he knew
right.
he was being used for ill intent and he went along with it.
So those are some of the
things
that you discussed in the book, some of those things, you know. It's interesting that you mentioned something about the angels earlier. I want to ask you this question. I would think, too, that angels would be confused about why God does certain things. We certainly are, too. You know, we're certainly confused about why God allows certain things. And I think that confusion on an angelic level is an interesting take on this story. Most times when some authors have explore the context of the flood and things of that nature, they're coming from a human aspect, but you're coming from an angelic aspect, and I think that confusion mirrors our own. So would you, and this is a weird question, would you say that the confusion that we share as men is the same as the confusion we share with angels? Like, God, why did you allow this to happen? Or is that just something creative license that you were doing? Like, do you think the angel Michael really had these questions?
You know, someone used to tease me because he's like, you're going to get to heaven and, you know, Michael's going to be really annoyed with you. And, you know, it's weird to think that you're writing characters you will see someday. And one of the things that I take creative license with is Michael was originally part of Satan's one-third. Like, Satan kind of had this, like, closer group of one-third, and mm-hmm. he was training them to be part of the revolt. Michael did not know that. None of them knew that at the time. But Gabriel, I actually had, would have been next in line the way I did my hierarchy. Lucifer was the archangel. I call him commander. And then Gabriel was lieutenant commander. And then Michael was just one of the lieutenants. But because of, I don't want to give a spoiler away, something happens during the actual revolt that God, promotes Michael to commander. Michael replaces Lucifer. And Michael doesn't even want it. He's like, no, Gabriel's next in line. Like, I don't want this. And but so throughout the book, Gabriel has a hard time knowing if Michael was left behind by Satan to be a spy. And mm-hmm. because he, in his opinion, if God made Lucifer the original archangel and he fell, there's nothing to say that just because he chose Michael now that Michael isn't also going to fall. So there's this somewhat friendly. It's kind of like Larry and Bob from VeggieTales. You know how they're always arguing. It's kind of like more of an adult version of that, is where like they don't really trust each other in at first, and so that's a theme that is kind of worked on throughout the book. But okay, so do I really think that he struggles as much as I make him struggle? I would guess probably not. But one of the things that an acquisitions editor, I think it was Zondervan or something years and years ago, he said, you can't write a book with angels as main characters because the reader can't relate to them. And I was thinking to myself, no, I make my angels pretty relatable. They're just not the way we would picture angels, because some Christians tend to, you know, they're robots. God gives them an order. They execute it, you know, without thought, without question. You know, they just obey like these perfect little ones. And no, that wouldn't be very relatable. It's more how Gabriel is, which is why Michael and Gabriel get on each other's nerves, because Michael questions and wants to understand, and Gabriel's like, God said it, I'm going to go do it. And, you know, so they kind of have some back and forth there. So the fact that, though, that angels can fall, I would say that they're definitely not robots. I mean, it's definitely not, you know, I'm just programmed to obey. I definitely think there could be some struggle, but I probably write. I've had some reviewers criticize that I made them too human. They definitely don't sin or anything like that, you know, but, you know, they definitely, you know, someone I think commented that Michael and Gabriel are like bickering teenage boys sometimes, like angels of God wouldn't act that way. I'm like, well, mine do, so.
You know, you bring up an interesting thought as I was listening to your response, and I was thinking free will, I do believe in free will. Free will applies to them like it does to us, just on a different way. We're created by God in a different plane than they are. They were created, you know, and God gave them free will. I mean, Satan did choose to do what he did. So, I mean,
right.
It's an interesting thought. You know, so maybe they will have free will, and maybe they get questions. I'm not saying, I don't know about the sin part. They would probably sin like we would. It'd be something different. It'd be a disobedience of a different kind, I believe. But I'm of the opinion that they're not robots. I think they have free will like we do. And I just think that they're, because they have a certain immortality that we don't. And that's where those wonderful conversations come up, where people say, well, can angels be redeemed? They fall, you know, those wonderful conversations I love to speculate about come up. Yeah, I won't go into that right now because that's not the point. But you just really brought up an interesting thing. That's why I can't wait for our listeners to get a sample of your work when we come back from the break, because JC is going to read an excerpt from Primordium. So I want you to gather your friends together and listen to this. And then later on, pick up your copy of Prophecy of the Air Primordium. It's available at Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure, go ahead, love of my sister, get your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Sofa Talk Podcast will consider Spurgeon's morning and evening devotionals, which deal with all of the things that we are fearful and anxious of, like job, family, and our country. Plus, we will take your prayer requests. Join us on upcoming episodes Monday through Friday for Sofa Talk at anchor.fm/Russell-Sherrard. That's anchor.fm/Russell-Sherrard.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the Queen of Tuesday Night, Parker J, and her guest right here on The Right Stuff.
And welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. So very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to J.C. Lamont. She is the author of the debut novel, Prophecy of the Air, Primordium, book one of the Chronicles of Time series. We're having a fantasy to her, as she lets us know that she did tons of research for this series. As a matter of fact, JC introduced herself not as a plotter, but as an architect. And you know, an architect has to know every single aspect of the building before it is even built. I commend her from the bottom of my heart. I do not have that sort of patience, which is why I am a Cancer. But when you read Prophecy of the Air Primordium, you're going to see why she is spectacular. So go ahead and get your copy of Prophecy of the Air Primordium today. Now, JC is going to read an excerpt from Primordium very early in the book. I think you're going to enjoy it. So without further ado, JC, I'm going to mute myself and thus give you the opportunity to read your excerpt. So I'm going to mute myself and go ahead, start whenever you're ready.
All right, thank you. Forbidden power, a power so formidable it was greater than immortality. Lucifer pressed against the glass, but it didn't shift beneath his touch. The large domed conservatory that housed the gold tree and its mystical fruit bore no door, no window, no ingress whatsoever. "Open," he ordered, but still no door appeared in the glass. "Reveal, disclose, unseal." The dome remained undisturbed, either inanimate or, more likely, ignorant of his authority. "I, Lucifer Halel, son of Elion, commander of the Malachim, head of the Divine Council, order you to open." The glass refused to acknowledge him, and Lucifer's fist clenched. Why did King Elion keep this tree locked away? Within the dome, the thick, twisted trunk suddenly unwound with a creaking groan. The upward-reaching branches spread out in all directions, and the lowermost boughs stretched to graze the ground. The shape-shifting tree continued to transform, and Lucifer stepped closer in fascination, his nose nearly touching the glass. A twilight ago, the tree was tall and branchless, with only a cluster of palms growing at its very tip. And before that, it grew narrow and cone-shaped with a scattering of feathered fronds, but never had he witnessed the change. The branches stopped just short of the glass, taunting his inability to enter. The elusive fruit shimmered in the light radiating from the palace. Lucifer pounded the dome in desperation. "What power do you possess?" A horn blare reverberated throughout the air, jerking him from his thoughts. Lucifer recognized it as a royal summons, but as the rest of the Malachim, the king's royal officials, had to travel to the palace from the Woodhavens, he knew he could stall for a few more moments. He ran his hand over the glass, up, down, across, over, back. He circled the dome, scanning the grassy floor within for any sign of a hidden underground door. Without doubt, the tree's fruit bore supernatural properties, for not only did a variety of trees across the celestial realm of Shemayim restore strength and vitality, but the white tree in the palace courtyard bestowed immortality. So for this tree to be locked away, it must bear a power King Elion did not wish to share, not even with the Divine Council, a power which makes him superior to all others, Lucifer muttered, and consequently makes all others inferior.
I like where you ended that, because you give the reader a hint of what's going on. And there's the freshness to the narrative that you gave as he's watching the tree grow. And I love how you just use this beginning part of Prophecy of the Air Primordium to show that example we kind of discussed briefly of free will, where here is Lucifer in the presence of God, upset because he doesn't have this authority to touch this tree. And it's little things like that that can be the precursor to a rift between us and man, as we will eventually find out. So that was an excerpt for our listeners out there from Prophecy of the Air, Primordium, Book 1 of Chronicles of Time series by J.C. Lamont. So my next question, of course, J.C., is who are your favorite characters? Dare I say Lucifer is one of your favorite characters, or some other one, someone else?
Oh, definitely not. In fact, I did not want to open with Lucifer for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had so many people, my agent and everyone's like, "You're opening with Michael and there's no tension. There's no drama because Michael's completely innocent. He lives in he's a perfect being living in a perfect world." But I didn't want to open with Lucifer, but they finally broke me down and made me realize, yeah, if you have a beginning where, you know, a girl pulls up in the car and opens the door and she gets out her groceries and you bring the groceries into the house and you set them on the counter, you know, that's a boring scene. If you know there's a serial killer hiding in her closet inside the house,
right.
Now her getting out of the car and opening the door and getting the groceries and walking into the house is very suspenseful. So they broke me down and I ended up opening with Lucifer, but no, he's definitely not my favorite character. I would say my favorite character by far is the prince. You know, the prince. The entire series is his story as told through the eyes of Michael. It's a love story.
Okay.
Because the prince is always trying to woo his bride. But the love story aspect is really just a theme because it reads more like a war story since it is Michael who's the main character and he's always battling demons and trying to protect mortals and stuff like that. Michael's very empathetic.
Real quickly, you broke up a little bit, JC. JC, you broke up a little bit. You were saying that
yes.
It reads like it's a love story between the prince, but you also said it reads like a war story because it's some fighting scenes with Michael. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Hold on. Yes. Oh, go. Can you repeat that question?
No, you were you broke up a little bit, and you were saying that your favorite character is the prince because it is his awesome mention that it reads like a war story. Was that correct?
Yes, a war story, because it is Michael. Like, Michael, you're seeing the prince's story through Michael the Archangel's eyes, and he is commander of the, you know, the Lord of Heaven's armies. And so it's a war story because he's always dealing with demons and battling demons and trying to protect mortals. So I would say that the theme of it is a love story, but, you know, it reads more action-y. Beyond the prince, I guess I would say I love Michael. He's very mm-hmm. empathetic. It often mm-hmm. comes across as reckless, especially to mm-hmm. Gabriel. Gabriel thinks he's very reckless because Michael's ready to just go wipe out the demons and end human suffering. You know, that's what he wants to do.
Yes.
Whereas Gabriel is the exact opposite of Michael. Nothing ever phases him. He never questions why God does or doesn't intervene. And he kind of has taken upon himself to be Michael's counterbalance. So the more reckless Gabriel perceives Michael as being, the more unflappable Gabriel becomes, which then in turn irritates Michael more. And, you know, they make a good team, even if they don't realize it.
Right. Right. Particularly, would you say Michael is a type A personality, the way you're depicting him?
Oh, probably.
Like I said,
he's like, okay, action, let's go.
We need people like that, and angels, I guess. We need them like that. Let's get it started, you know. But you know what? It's been fantastic talking to you today, JC. I know we had a little difficulty with the connection. I know we got a wonderful glimpse into Prophecy of the Air Primordium. What I want to do is have people have an opportunity to discover your social media outlets. So go ahead and share them with us today.
Okay. Well, I do have a Facebook. It's a Facebook author page. I'm not very good at keeping up to date. I'm pretty much an introvert, and I also have ADHD. So if I'm working on a book and I'm hyper-focused on researching and writing, I don't think to, like, log on to Facebook and make a witty status update. But I do have one, and I do check it on occasion. I also have a blog called blogginghisstory.com. Which is basically kind of, right now it's just from the beginning to Genesis 3:15, but it draws on my characters a little bit, but it's trying to set up gospel literacy, basically. It kind of uses a lot of TV, movies, whatever you call that, current things like
pop culture. Pop culture.
Yes, that's the word. Thank you. Yes, it draws mm-hmm. on pop culture, and it says, like, so for instance, in Good Omens, one of the, you know, they question, you know, why did Jesus die? And they're like, because he told people to love each other. And so I kind of like, well, sort of, but not exactly. And so I draw on that first and then try to expound on it. And so I think I have about 90 some blog posts on that. Mm-hmm. But mostly, yeah, it's just Facebook. I mean, I have a Twitter, but I'm almost never on Twitter. So,
JC.
But if you type in JC Lamont on Facebook and you see someone holding a sword, you have the right one.
That's you, right? I am the one holding the sword and I will destroy you. That's what your profile
is. That is actually the sword of Michael the Archangel. I found
That's
that on
awesome.
eBay. It is a replica of the sword that Michael holds in art.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Well, JC, thank you for being with us today on the show. As this show is always about encouraging authors to pick up the pen and write, what are some encouraging words you can leave for our authors today?
Well, I would have said architect, but since obviously there's a lot of people who don't do that. What I say, edit, like know your craft, know your plot points. The best advice I could give is start with your climax, because if you know, not writing it, but just even as a pantser, if you know what your climax is and you know what your story problem is, because your climax either solved or did not solve that problem. And then you just keep working your way backwards to add plot points. And the plot points should always be the opposite of where the direction is headed. So if you, you know, like in Lord of the Rings, like, okay, your plot problem is to, you know, destroy the One Ring and eradicate evil, then getting captured by orcs and getting the ring in the hands of the enemy is the opposite of that. And so you just keep going backwards and adding in those plot points. I'd rather call them plot twists, because they're supposed to keep twisting the story in a direction the main characters did not think it was going. But if you start with your climax, you make sure that you do actually get there. So,
I think that's really good advice, JC. I would have never thought about that. I've heard some people say start in the middle, start at the end. But if you start at the climax, which is, like you said, destroy the One Ring, you know, but how do we get there? And that'll help. That's a good advice. You know, I can tell you architect, because I'm not. I can tell you know what you're doing. You totally know what you're doing. So, JC, once again, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us on the show today. And I cannot wait to have you back with your second book and have you back real soon.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
And we were talking today to JC Lamont. She is the author of a debut novel, Prophecy of the Air, Primordium. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. Thank you so much for joining for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen of Tuesday Nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at ParkerJCole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.